You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DStv channel 856.
Welcome, 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 and happy Friday to you. Niklas Bauer standing on the Clement Magnotella show today on 702. We've got 3 hours ahead of us. Really looking forward to the time we'll be spending together on the wireless. I hope you've managed to survive the week unscathed and have a fantastic weekend lined up for you. And let's use the next 3 hours to walk the talk, expand our horizons, maybe inform our opinions, and also educate ourselves. I think that it's very important that we all not only have opinions, but have opinions that are based on fact and based on insight that we allow our brains to enjoy. I think that in the world we live in today, we have particular worldviews, and once those worldviews are challenged, well, it can result in tea being spilt, blood on the dance floor, blood on these social media streets. And that's something that I want to talk about in the open. As always, the first hour of the Clement Magnotella show is an open line. Lines are now open on 011-883-0702. You can put anything you want on the agenda. I'd like to speak about this throwing under the bus of Bonga Nkosi Madikizela down in the Western Cape. It's now emerged that the man doesn't have a BCom degree, as he previously said. There's now an investigation that's been launched by the Democratic Alliance. And first of all, it was suspended as Transport MEC and then suspended as the party leader, but then not suspended. He actually stepped back. And I don't know, I'm wondering who threw that guy under the bus? Surely it must have been knowledge somewhere within the party itself. And how does the Democratic Alliance not be painted with the political brush of hypocrisy here? Cast your minds back to how Paulo Jordan, NEC, former NEC member of the ANC and former minister of, I believe it was communications, how he was absolutely thrown to the dogs by opposition parties like the DA. And I'm not too sure if Gareth van Onselen was a party apparatchik at that particular moment, but he broke the story about how he said that he had a PhD that Paulo Jordan didn't have. And the language that the DA uses every single time someone in government is found to have falsified their qualifications or been dishonest about it is out. Out, out, out. We don't need an investigation. We don't have scope to be tolerant towards academic dishonesty. And I'm wondering, how do you think the DA should be handling this? And do you feel at all for Bonga Nkosi Madikizela? Because let's not forget, it's him, Dan Plato, and Jordan Hill Lewis that are vying for the Cape Town mayoral candidate post as we go into local government elections come the end of the year. Who tipped off the Daily Maverick? How did this happen? One wonders. There's a political aspect to this. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on that on 011-883-0702. And you can send us an SMS, 31702, drop us a WhatsApp on 0727021702. Voice notes, of course, also always enjoyed on this program. And because it's Friday, I thought I'd talk about a little thing that happened to me in traffic. I was coming off the highway, going onto Grayston Road, and for the first time in absolute ages, I saw the JMPD there, just monitoring traffic, making sure that the flow of traffic was smooth, and also ensuring that that people are safe, because the Grayston off-ramp is, of course, also another hotspot for smash and grabs and other crime. And I wound down my window and I said to the JMPD officer, you know what, thank you. Thank you very much for being here and making sure that we're safe. And he really appreciated it. And we had a bit of a chat, not a fat chat, because, you know, you're only at the robo for a couple of seconds, a couple of minutes at most. I said, you're working this weekend? He said, yes, I am doing my duty this weekend. I said, well, thank you. And I don't know, some people may say, why are you praising a fish for swimming? But I think that there's something to be said about trying to expel as many good vibes as possible on a Friday. And apart from that, really cheering on a public servant, someone that works for the state, whether or not it's a city, a government department, a government institution, for doing the right thing and doing their job, and you appreciating it. I don't think that the public servants out there that are doing their job properly hear it often enough. But that's just my thoughts there. You might also want to chat about Jesse Duarte and the state capture comments. We've got Aubrey and Fosleris we'll get to in a moment or so. But last but not least, I also want to put on the agenda this academic down in Cape Town that was, how do I put it? Lwazi Lushaba and his Hitler comments. How did you feel about that? Yeah, because all we heard in the news about that was about how Hitler committed no crime and that all Hitler did was to white people what white people had normally reserved for black people. And quite rightly so, Hitler's a very touchy subject, not only for Jewish people, but everybody. The specter of the Second World War continues to haunt us. But that was a 12-second clip out of a 55-minute lecture. And yes, I know that the typical political thing to say is, that was taken out of context. But I quite rightly think that it was. And there was an article that was written by, a column written yesterday by Chris Roper in the Financial Mail. He'll join us in a couple of moments' time to discuss how journalism has failed. Newsrooms are galloping towards salacious headlines and things that will cause outrage and clicks without giving full attention to the facts and full context to what people rely on the media for. So we'll speak to Chris Roper in a moment or so, but first things first, let's go to our open line calls on 011-883-0702.
Walking the talk.
This is 702.
702.
Aubrey in Fosleris. Molo.
Hey, morning, Mick. How's it?
So far, so good. You got to be in a good mood because it's Friday, right?
No, Nick, I'm just surprised about Jesse Duarte when she's saying the state chapter like it's concentrating on the ANC. I've just heard on the news headline that Lucky Montana is doing that. Is Lucky also ANC? And Dudu Mien is also ANC. So does she want us to concentrate on the UDM, to bring the UDM? Who was running the state during that process of the state capture? So I can see, Nick, that she's bouncing like a rugby ball. Maybe she must go to Nkanda. When she comes out there, she'll be bouncing like a tennis ball, I'm telling you. She'll get a good advice from her, from Uber, and then she'll come up happy. Because what she's saying, it doesn't make sense to me, eh?
Yeah, Aubrey, I mean, politicians at the best of times are chameleons, right? But I also look at Jesse Duarte rather incredulously and think, lady, the ANC has been running the country. They are the governing party. And I mean, it was the governing party that decided to set up this commission in the first place. Jacob Zuma wrote the terms of reference, of course, based on the outcomes of the Public Protector Report. But in the same breath, get real. Who is supposed to be on trial other than the ANC? The ANC ran the state. And if you're having an inquiry into state capture, well, it's obvious.
Correct, Nick. We can't go and ask UDM or IFP for that matter. Find out who was running the state. That's why I'm saying she must go to Ubaba in Gaza and get some advice. She'll come out nice there.
I believe she's already been 14 in Kandla. So, I mean, let's see how things progress there. I saw a tweet yesterday from Richard Calland, professor at UCT, one of South Africa's most foremost political analysts. And even by South African standards, politically, the next couple of weeks are really going to be fire. I wonder what's going to happen next. Look forward to it. Let's see if it causes the political changes that are needed for everybody in society to benefit. That seems like a bit of a pie in the sky, but let's see. 011-883-0702. I would like to chat to you now about these comments that were made by the UCT lecturer, the Adolf Hitler comments by Lwazi Lushaba. And like I said, we're talking about the reporting of that. And I'm joined now live on the line by Chris Roper. He's the deputy CEO for Code for Africa and columnist for the Financial Mail. Chris?
Yeah, in my downtime.
Oh, okay, geez. So you do this for relaxation?
I did for relaxation, and then the excitement comes with the Twitter vitriol afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that we've had long discussions on about over the years. Social media, the great tool that it is, but also the double-edged sword that it sometimes produces. But let's focus on what happened at UCT. I mean, Luwazi Lushaba, he was christened Mampara of the Week by the Sunday Times because of a lecture that he had about not Adolf Hitler. Because the headline was, UCT launches investigation into academics lecture on Adolf Hitler. But he was actually talking about the evolution of political science. And I, once again, want to repeat that 12-second clip that went viral. Hitler committed no crime. All Hitler did was to do to white people what white people had normally reserved for black people. And Chris, you write an article, or a column in the Financial Mail about how it's been a failure of journalism because that little 12-second clip has been completely and utterly taken out of context.
Yes, and I mean the other Sunday Times headline was Hitler committed no crime. Fury after UCT lecturer hails Nazi madman. Now there's absolutely no hailing of Hitler in Lushaba's lecture at all. But just before before I get into that, I just want to say that I'm not a political scientist and I'm not an expert in Holocaust denialism. So I'm running here about journalism. So if you do want to read something that's really good on the subject, you should go and read Stephen Robbins in the Daily Maverick. He's written a really excellent piece about it. But yeah, just to sum up, the big problem is you cannot base a story on a 12-second soundbite from a 55-minute lecture. I mean, no journalist worth his or her salt would ever accept that as evidence-based reporting. So this is just pure clickbait. And if you actually go and listen to the lecture, it's a very nuanced lecture about the fact that before the Holocaust, all the genocides prior to that were white-on-black violence. And political science itself didn't really consider those as crimes because they were part of like nation projects, essentially. Didn't consider them as crimes. Only when it became white-on-white violence was the discipline of political science forced to then acknowledge genocide as a crime. So the sharpest rhetorical point is that when Hitler did it, it actually wasn't a crime to political scientists and white people because they thought it was fine when it's been done to black people. Suddenly it becomes a crime because they have to notice it. Now you can argue that this is a stupid analogy. You can argue that his logic is misplaced, all kinds of things. But what you cannot do as a journalist is say that this man has hailed Hitler and hails Nazi madmen. I mean, that is just rubbish journalism.
Sad state of affairs in our newsroom dictates, though, Chris, that we are galloping towards things that will get the most interest in the shortest time possible without forgetting the very, very basics. And I know as a journalist, I have been guilty of exactly the same. How the hell did we get here, though?
Well, of course, we've all been guilty of making journalism mistakes, but it was very hard for us to do so. We had to try quite hard to be stupid, because we had editors, some editors, an entire mechanism to stop this happening. I think the problem now is the need for speed. And the other problem is, you can think of it as a problem or you can think of it as an advantage, is that we are now speaking as journalists. I'm including myself as a journalist, even though I'm not really anymore. We're now speaking to multiple audiences at the same time. Before, you could speak from the perspective of one title to an audience that had really been created by your title because they chose to read you. Now with social media, you have like multiple audiences, multiple people reading what you do. And therefore, you become rushed. You try and cover too many things. You try and cover things that aren't really in your field of expertise. And that's where the mistakes come in. But it's also a positive thing. You know? I mean, it's great that journalism... I mean, the erosion of trust in media is a terrible thing for democracy in one sense, but in another sense, it's quite a positive to have people not trusting things anymore, blindly, but everything becomes interrogated. So sure, the problem is that journalism is, a lot of journalism, not all by any means, is suffering a kind of a crisis of structural integrity. But on the other hand, I think what's going to come out of it is going to be a good thing.
Well, the lines are open, 011-883-0702. Final question I have for you before we part our ways, Chris, is some people are now accusing you of being Helen Zaleski, right? She's just released a book entitled Go Woke or Go Broke. And people are saying that you're kind of making the same point. You know, people are willing to pander to a particular worldview that does cause outrage, that does get the clicks in, that does have people their jaws dropping to the floor when they see a headline. How do you respond to that?
I don't believe people are saying that. I think you made that up because you have it in for me. that was the Helen Diller response. Well, I mean, that's fine. I mean, if what they're saying is that difficult subjects have to be broached, and if you broach the difficult subject, people are going to accuse you of doing it because you want to be read. Well, I mean, obviously you want to be read. You're making an intervention into what is a very important debate. By the way, Helen Diller's book, I think, should be titled Go Anti-Woke or Stay Woke, because I think that's what she's doing. Yeah, you know, people who are anti-wokeness are just doing it because they're jumping on a desperate, it's a desperate attempt to try and fix their kind of crumbling authority. In fact, nobody listens to them anymore. So, you know, so it is quite hurtful that your mysterious unnamed source is accusing of being like Helen Diller, because that's really a first for me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wouldn't say you're being like her, but you could be accused of being in the same WhatsApp group. But do you think that there's space to say that you would both want the same thing? I mean, it's a crying shame that in 2021, newsrooms are each and every year expected to do more with less resources, and you could argue that it's a foregone conclusion that this is gonna happen.
I mean, I specifically just said a bit earlier that I think it's a positive thing for journalism. Journalism is going to come out stronger and better, and it's one of the mainstays in the fight to preserve our democracy, and it's going to get better at it. It's entirely the opposite of what Helen Diller said. You know, so your analogy is entirely incorrect there. You know, the point is, I welcome the fact that journalism is challenged at every point, because that's really what the mechanism of journalism was set up to do to itself. The fact that it's now being done by the readers is a great thing for me. I mean, Helen Diller is irrelevant to this discussion, to be honest. You know, she's a politician. I'm a columnist. I have to write things that make you think and that give you different sides of a question, because I want to show you, like, the multiple perspectives of how you could address something like Dr. Schauber's lecture. Helen Diller is merely scoring political points and trying to advance the purpose of her political party.
Chris Roper, thank you for the chat on the Clement Manyazela Show, Deputy CEO for Code for Africa, and of course also columnist at the Financial Mail. Helen Diller, how did we bring that in? I think it's important, you know, the book that she just released, I think it's part of the conversation. And I'll leave you with one thought before we move on to our next topic. Good journalists break down stereotypes. Bad journalists build them up. Your thoughts, 011-883-0702.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk, 702.
So there's a couple of SMSs and WhatsApps that are coming in saying you cannot and should not ever compare the genocide of, you know, that was perpetrated by the Nazis to anything else that's happened in terms of massacres and genocides in history. And I'm not trying to compare here. It shouldn't be a competition about which massacre was worse, which genocide was worse. But I think that there is something to be said about the way we've looked at perhaps, you know, the German colonial history in Namibia and the treatment of the Herero as compared to Nazism and the persecution of the Jews. Why do we need to create a superiority of hurt and a superiority of genocide? Genocide is genocide, no matter who it happens to. And maybe there was a point that was to be made by the good lecturer down in UCT. Why don't you drop us a line, 011-883-0702. Otherwise, you drop us a WhatsApp voice note to 0727021702. We've got a WhatsApp voice note now.
Good morning, Nicholas. I believe what Bongi Nkosi did was wrong, was totally wrong. He shouldn't have lied about his qualifications. Having said that, it was also calculated of the DA, because I believe that they knew all along that he didn't have those qualifications, but they waited for the right moment to make a move. This was a political strategy, Kennedy and Joburg.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to look at who benefits. Who benefits from that story being broken, right? Your thoughts on that, 011-883-0702. And do you not think that the DA needs to act strongly against Bongi Nkosi Madikizela? Because if they don't, then every single time they criticize the ANC for putting cadres that don't have the right qualifications into a position, well, then should people living in glass houses really be throwing the stones? Lines are open, 011-883-0702.
702.
Call us on 011-883-0702.
Welcome back. The open line with myself, Niklas Bauer, on the Clement Magnatella Show. Lines are open, 011-883-0702. Couple of quick WhatsApps here. We're talking about the column that was written by Chris Roper yesterday in the Financial Mail, talking about the Lwazi Lushaba lecture at UCT, where he was christened Mampara of the Week by the Sunday Times, regarding what he said about Hitler. Hitler committed no crime. Context. And he says, strange the genocide in Rwanda is not mentioned. Well, that's another example. Right? Genocide is genocide. Jonathan in Johannesburg, you think otherwise, though.
Hello, Nicholas.
Yes, good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, how are you?
So far, so good. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Look, firstly, listening to lectures of that nature, it takes a certain type of person to hear a lecture like that and actually contemplate the, and you know, actually debate the odds one way or the other. The fact of the matter is, as you said before, this is not a scorecard. People don't claim to have, you know, a greater loss or a greater suffering. Everybody's suffering is individual, and everybody suffers in many different ways when they are being persecuted. The only difference between Nazism and, for example, you know, what you talked about, the Hereros in Namibia, would be essentially that this is a government-instituted, multinational, ethnic cleansing to a degree that was not just brutal, it was designed to eliminate a race. And not just a race of a religion. It was also designed to eliminate homosexuals, black people, as much as possible throughout wherever the Germans were occupying. So it's a very different. The only comparison I can clearly think of in the last 30 years that would come close to that, besides the Hutus and the Tutsis in Rwanda, it was the ethnic cleansing by the Serbs of the Muslims in Sarajevo and Bosnia Herzegovina in total, because that was a situation where there were concentration camps to probably the same way. However, they weren't systematic gassings and murders in order to rid the people. It was designed to subdue the people, but it was certainly brutal. There's no scorecard yet. If you ask the people from Bosnia in the early 80s and up to the mid-90s how they felt about it, they'll tell you passionately that it was the worst thing that could ever have happened to humanity. But it's not a scorecard. That's the bottom line. And it's not the kind of thing that actually should even be brought out and aired in public.
Jonathan, do you not see in any way, shape or form perhaps the point that the UCT lecturer was trying to make? And I agree with you. I mean, you're just echoing my point. This is not a scorecard. You don't need to say, okay, my genocide was worse than yours. I think that there, you know, history is absolutely littered with examples of not exactly the system that was put together by the Nazis for not only the persecution and extermination of the Jews, but indeed other so-called undesirables. It wasn't necessarily a government policy elsewhere, but it doesn't discount the likes of the Cape Grim massacre, for instance, of Aboriginal Tasmanians in the 19th century. And we can go on about examples and examples and examples. My question to you is, if you're saying that it shouldn't even be brought up, how are we to understand and learn from the past if we can't adequately ventilate it, especially in an institution like a university?
So, excuse me, I didn't mean that it shouldn't be discussed in each situation, discussed on its merits in isolation, or perhaps as a global discussion about individual issues. But comparisons should never be made about things like this. That's what I'm saying.
Why, though?
Because unless you're comparing specific, ideologies, to understand published ideologies, it was very clear what the Nazis were doing. In other cases, people wanted to hide. Obviously, during the war, the Nazis did hide as much as they could, but it was clear that they were definitely persecuting on a systematic transcontinental basis. Whereas, I'm sure there are other examples of where things have been probably as brutal in isolation. But in terms of ventilating the ideologies, that's fine. But to compare them is for what purpose? I see no value in actually trying to compare different people's suffering.
Okay. I see the point you're trying to make, Jonathan. Thank you very much for taking the time to unpack it on the open line there. 011-883-0702. Dennis in Pretoria on the WhatsApp line says, can this lecture by Lushaba be compared to the business of dragging Adam Habib down? He didn't deserve the treatment he received either. Well, Dennis, I mean, that's also open to interpretation, right? I think that that where Adam Habib went wrong was that he doubled down on something that he didn't do, and he tried to explain his way out of it. I think that there perhaps is a discussion to be had about the context in which his comments were made. But Adam Habib, what's happening to him? He's responsible for his own actions. And it's as a result of what he said. I don't know. I think that that there's a discussion to be had around the treatment of very, very contentious issues. But we need to also understand that when people are slighted, when people are outraged, it's not completely misplaced, and it shouldn't be dismissed either. Lines are open, 011-883-0702. Let's go to line 2. Good morning. Welcome to the radio.
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Hello? Oh, okay. Yes, my name is Eberhard. Just for background quickly, I'm a South African who left South Africa in 1974 when I was supposed to go to Angola. I've been coming back ever since in the recent years. And I always, every week, sort of, I look forward to Mail and Guardian and the stories that's happening in South Africa. And I listen to the 702, which is very informative. But the one topic that struck me as being horrible, Daily Maverick, number 168, headline, tracking the chain, tracking treasure, where is the money from the Chinese train heist? I mean, this thing is so, the old friend Brian Molefe is mentioned there, the Guptas, Transnet, tenderpreneurs, what. But what stuns me most, it's the Chinese government. It's a state enterprise which is collaborated with the Guptas and with whomever else to steal money from the South African taxpayers. It's a whole page, and I wonder why this is. I haven't heard anything about this in I was only here since January now, so maybe this has been discussed plenty of times before. You know what I'm referring to?
I don't think that you'll be the first one to point out that the news cycle doesn't necessarily adequately ventilate all of the most important issues in our society. But I'm at a loss. I'm not too sure. Christus in Midrand.
Hi, Nicholas. You can't compare this lecture to Habib, because Habib, how can I put it? He wasn't lecturing. He wasn't trying to compare apples with apples. you know, which that's what the lecture in Cape Town was trying to do. So I hear there was a call. I said, you can't compare the two. This may be the type of a genocide that, yes, you can, because you are exposing the unfairness of the biasness that is so embedded in our society, where when certain things happen to certain people, they are magnified. But when they happen to certain people, they don't even get mentioned. So to compare the genocide in Europe compared to the genocide in Namibia, there's two contrasts. The one in Europe was magnified and the reparations were paid. But what happened in Namibia, even today, there are no reparations, there are no numbers, there is not even a commemoration for it. So when he says then that Hitler committed no crime back then, it's because you look at it, it was a crime, we know it was a crime, but the society didn't consider it as a, considered him to commit a crime. But when they were massacring black Africans in Africa, not even once it was mentioned as a crime. So Habib, on the other hand, sure, oh, Habib, I don't know where to start. He wasn't even lecturing. He was just going on and he said in his country,
look, N-word. Kostas, I agree with you. You know, compare apples with apples, right? But what I'm trying to say is that we're talking about the reporting. We're talking about the journalism here, right? And I'm not defending Adam Habib. And I'm not even defending this lecturer, Lushaba, down in UCT. What I'm trying to say is that journalists rush to what will be the most shared, the most clicked, what will cause the most reaction. And I think very often, out of no fault of their own, because this is what we have been conditioned in contemporary newsrooms to do. And I'll use the example of Adam Habib once again, and I'm not making a comparison here. But what I'm trying to say is that the way it was reported on, some people were left thinking that Adam Habib stood on a platform, a lectern, in front of a bunch of students at SOAS in a public meeting and defended the use of the N-word, which was incorrect. Completely and utterly, that has nothing to do with the facts. So that's the point I'm trying to get to is, I think that the first duty of a journalist is to the truth and presenting the facts and doing so in such a way that the recipient of that message makes a decision for themselves. And I know that I'm guilty of doing the opposite of that, but I think that we need to remind ourselves of the role that journalism needs to play.
You are 100%, and you said it very well. The purpose of journalism, it shouldn't be to be clickbait, but rather to tell the story in its entirety. I agree with you. You said it very well. That was a bad image of journalism by Sunday Times, by Times Live. And I think they need to be called out. They really let down journalism right there. I agree with you 100%.
Kostas and Midrand, always a pleasure chatting to you, my man. Happy Friday to you as well.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
Welcome back. It's the open line until midday on the Clement Manutella Show. Kyle and Delmas, thank you so much for patiently waiting.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
My name is Kyle.
Yes.
I just want to comment on the UCT story about the doctor who commented about Hitler. People need to understand what the university environment is about. This is stimulate academic and intellectual discussion. And there must be academic and intellectual freedom. There must be no censorship. People go to universities to learn how to think and how to analyze situations and how to argue. If you're going to put some discussions out of the limits of debate, how do you expect the people in the university to do their job? So there should be no censorship. In a university environment, everybody should speak about everything under the sun. The second point I want to make about the issue is that it depends on who is passing the judgment. During the Second World War, the Allies trial of the Nazis was a victor's trial because all the members of the tribunal had committed war crimes at some point. Britain committed war crimes against the Afrikaner populace during the Second Anglo-Boer War. Nobody tried them for it. There was the Armenian genocide of 1915, where 1 million Armenian intellectuals were killed. Nobody talked about it. There was the Katyn massacre, where Russia killed Polish intellectuals during the Second World War. Yet the same hypocrites are the ones who sit on the tribunal judging other people. Well, it doesn't make the persecution of Jews right, but everybody has that. And everybody has done that at some point in the course of history. And everybody must be, if we're going to be fair, then everybody must be tried. So, but most importantly, in the university environment, people should allow free discussion. That's what that environment is for. Thank you. I'm Taya from Delma.
Kyle, thank you very much for that input there. I think that that should be something that should be jealously guarded, the ability to discuss societal taboos, especially in an environment like a university. I think that it's a very good point to be made. We've got a WhatsApp voice note in, Abel. What is it?
Hi, Nicholas, NSTA. Yeah, I fully agree with you. Genocide is genocide, regardless of the number of people massacred. There's one incident in Zimbabwe, 82 Mugabe, killing people in Matabeleland, and nobody talks about it. We don't even know the number of people killed. They're saying it's 20,000, 40,000. It was genocide. You know, that's what it was. And that's what it is.
Oh, once again, I just want to repeat, you know, I don't think that it's helpful for us to compare pain and suffering, but I think that it's important for us to also admit that genocide is genocide, regardless of who it happens to. And I think maybe that is the point, or at least one of them, that the UCT lecturer Lishaba was trying to make. Bonaventure in Randburg, thank you for patiently waiting.
Hello, how are you?
So far, so good. Please go ahead.
Okay, my comment is actually about the genocide happening currently in Nigeria. In 1960, Nigeria had an independence, and they had three geopolitical zones, which is the Igbo and the Yoruba and the Hausas. Now, in 1969, there was a massive killing that happened on the people of Biafra that actually demanded to have succession from the Republic of Nigeria. It was not allowed. Both women and children of over 4 million people or 5 million people were killed, slaughtered in a broad daylight. I want to bring to your notice that this very slaughtering is still going on in our day to day. Most of the major roads in Nigeria are currently abandoned because they are no longer transportable because of the bandits. The governor from the north has hired missionaries from Africans who are mostly Fulanese to come into Nigeria because they need to take over the nation. This is currently ongoing as I speak now, and nobody is talking about it. Such slaughtering will not mention the Nigerian news. You will not also hear it from the CNN. Most of these guys are like paid news. If you pay them, they will talk about your news for the world to hear. This is currently going on now in Olu. To be precise, more than 2,000 people have been killed from last year to currently as I speak to you now. It is not on news, it's not on CNN, it's not on Nigerian news, it's not talked about anywhere. Those of us from the east can hardly go back to our villages right now because the Fulani Caliphate has hired themselves from all over Africa to go cause war in Nigeria and kill innocent families and children. Hardly people in the east currently don't even go to farms. They don't farm anymore because their farms are no longer safe. Kidnapping and asking for ransom has become the order of the day. It is widespread. Most of them are actually not Nigerians, but machineries that were politicians hired to win election. But came into the country and now refuse to go back because they believe it's a nation that anytime a ransom is called, people will run around to pay the ransom.
Bonaventure, who does this serve, right? Who does this serve, the fact that it's not talking about, that it's not spoken about, rather, that it's not only not spoken about in the media, but no action is taken by, indeed, the Nigerian government or any other international government or institution?
The truth of the matter is that they are hiding this away actually from the international community. The world is not talking about it. It's true that 2,000 people are killed in France. It will be publicized all over the world. We will change our DPs on WhatsApp and Facebook for France flags, because we're in solidarity with France. We want to stand with them. But such a thing is happening in a black nation and nobody cares about it. It's not being talked about anywhere, not in news, not in CNN, not anywhere. It's not mentioned. Except just the way I'm talking about it now, many people who are in South Africa may have an idea of what I'm talking about. The Niger Delta, where the oil that kept the nation rolling is actually being brought from, they are being killed in their thousands, and nobody is talking about it. Nigerian government still fly to a place like London for treatment. The president just came in yesterday, flown in from London for a treatment.
Bonaventure, let me ask you this. Who do you think is going to change that, though?
Pardon?
Who do you think is going to change that?
The United Nations need to come in. People are being killed. This one is happening. Remember, we're talking about genocide here. We're talking about the ones that happened to the Jewish like 50 years ago or 100 years ago. We're talking about something that is ongoing right now. Many of the members, many of the guys from the East are actually now in exile. Most of us that have been in South Africa for a while, we hardly travel home. I can just look at my family. My wife has two identical twins during the lockdown. I can't allow those children, for the love I have for them, to travel to Nigeria with parents to what is actually going on right now.
Bonaventure, we're going to have to unfortunately leave it at that, because we've run out of time.